You're watching Behind the Screens. Grab some popcorn, fill up a drink, and take a seat. Our feature presentation is about to begin. Morning, good afternoon, good evening, whatever time zone you may be listening. Welcome to another amazing episode of Behind the Screens. I'm Chris Chason, and joined as always is my co-host and best friend, Mike Lakewood. Mike, how you doing, man?
I'm doing amazing, Chris. I'm positively ecstatic to be back here for episode 4 of Behind the Screens.
Oh yeah, we've got an interesting episode for you today. Now, remember 2 weeks ago we talked about Iron Man? Even though it kicked off like a golden age of comic book movies, that's not really where it started.
No, that's not where it started at all. There was so many more humble beginnings to talk about, Chris.
Yeah, so we decided we're talking about a movie, let's just say it kind of kicked off the modern era of comic book movies and kind of inspired the Marvel Cinematic Universe, despite its own franchise's track record when you think about it, but... Well, that's a story for another day.
Exactly, my friend. We're going to be talking about a film that many people would say is overhyped, overrated, was back in the day a Marvel, but has since maybe died out in many others' eyes. A film that has an incredible cast, a very decent area of direction, some effects that hold up, some effects that don't, but at least in the hearts of a great many people, this film stands as the beginning of the great superhero film age that we are still living in today, and will no doubt be living in it when our kids are born. We're going to be looking at 20th Century Fox's 2000 film, X-Men, directed by Bryan Singer.
Oh yeah, X-Men? In terms of Marvel Comics, it's not the most popular out there, because everyone knows that when it comes to the two Marvel teams, the Avengers is always on top. But the X-Men has its loyal fan base with its certain iconic stories and the animated series from the 90s.
Exactly, my friend. You know, I've actually been not the biggest fan of the X-Men for many, many years. You know, I've always been more of a DC guy, getting more and more into Marvel, into high school and into college, learning more and more every single day about Marvel's immense library of heroes that you could spend decades learning about and still not be close to understanding everything. But one thing that I have come to understand is the X-Men is one of the greatest superhero teams of all time, with its iconic message about those with extraordinary abilities as an allegory for racism and discrimination in not only the United States, but the entire world, putting faces and names for those who feel different and pushed out of society because of something that they simply could not control.
Absolutely.
And it's just amazing that they were able to, after such an immense amount of time, able to craft a story that would resonate with not only audiences at the time, but for like a little bit, reach out to fans of the now modern 2020s, I think.
Yeah, because I feel like even in the recent climate of what happened last year, people can look back on the X-Men and see it as a positive way to combat racism, even though it has its own problems, but one thing at a time. So we're basically going to discuss the positives on what made the X-Men movie so impactful, not just as like its concepts and metaphors, but and symbolisms, but also as a comic book movie.
Exactly, and we simply cannot do that without talking about the plot first, then the characters second, its crew and achievements third, and of course every other good thing following that, my friends.
Oh yes. So let's dig into 2000's X-Men, where let's see how uncanny it gets.
Indeed. In Nazi-occupied Poland in 1944, a young Eric Magnus is separated from his parents upon entrance into the Auschwitz concentration camp. While he attempts to reach them, he causes a set of metal gates to bend towards him. This is the result of a mutant ability to create magnetic fields and control metal manifesting, but he is knocked out by the guards. In the not-too-distant future, what time is it?
early 2000s, I guess? I don't know.
I know what time it is. Marvel time. U.S. Senator Robert Kelly attempts to pass a Mutant Registration Act in Congress, which would force mutants to reveal their identities and abilities. Present are Eric, now going by the name Magneto, Master of Magnet, and his telepathic colleague, Professor Charles Xavier, played respectively by Sir Ian McKellen and Sir Robert Patrick, who...
Patrick Stewart.
I apologize. I had Terminator 2 on the brain.
Patrick Stewart.
That's correct.
Yeah, Patrick Stewart and Ian McKellen play Professor X and Magneto in this movie.
Go ahead. Xavier sees Magnus in attendance and is concerned with how he will respond to the Registration Act. In Meriden, Mississippi, 17-year-old Marie DeAngto... I'm just going to call her Rogue.
Yeah, let me see how you pronounce that last name. It looks like... DeAncanto.
Let's just call her Marie. She accidentally puts her boyfriend into a coma after kissing him on the lips. Because of her mutant ability, it absorbs the power and the life force of anyone she touches. She runs away from home and adopts the name Rogue. Really awesome name, let me tell you this.
And fitting, given her situation.
She runs away all the way to Alberta, Canada, where she arrives at a dive bar, meeting Logan, also known as... the Wolverine, played by the amazingly awesome Hugh Jackman.
Oh, we'll gush about him in a moment.
I could spend the whole podcast talking about him. I think I will.
Oh, God.
He is a mutant who possesses superhuman healing abilities and metal claws that protrude from between his knuckles. They are attacked on the road by Sabretooth, one of Magneto's minions, but two of Xavier's students, Cyclops and Storm, who are Scott Summers and...
Aurora Monroe.
Awesome. They arrive and save them just in the nick of time. Wolverine and Rogue are brought to Xavier's mansion and school for mutants in Westchester County, New York. That's in New York City, correct?
It's a few minutes outside of the city, but technically, yeah.
Very nice. Xavier tells Logan that Magneto appears to have taken an interest in him and asks him to stay while Xavier's mutants, the X-Men, investigate the matter. Rogue enrolls in the school. I'm going to be telling a lot of people to enroll in school as soon as they can. Yo, that's good. I love that. Oh my goodness gracious.
But she enrolls in school.
Senator Robert Kelly is abducted by two more of Magneto's minions, Togue. It's Toad and Mystique. Yeah. Really awesome characters, let me tell you.
Oh, yeah.
This movie has a lot of awesome designs when it comes to the different mutant varieties and all the different outward appearances of them. They are brought to their hideout on the uncharted island of Genosha. So that's where they were. They were on Genosha.
That explains a lot.
I never quite figured out where the island was that's in those movie scenes, but now I know it's Genosha for later reference. Magneto uses Kelly as a test subject for a machine powered by his magnetic abilities that generates a field of radiation which induces mutations in normal human beings. Kelly later escapes by taking advantage of his newfound mutant powers. Rogue visits Wolverine during the night while he is having a nightmare. Startled, he accidentally stabs her through the chest with his claws. But she is able to absorb his healing ability and recover without a scratch. This is observed by fellow students who arrive to help. She is later convinced by Mystique, who has disguised herself as her amazingly hot crush, Bobby Drake, a.k.a. Iceman, that Xavier is angry with her and that she should leave the school at once. Xavier uses his mutant locating machine, Cerebro, to find Rogue at a nearby train station, and the X-Men go to retrieve her. Meanwhile, Mystique enters Cerebro and sabotages it. Having left ahead of Storm and Cyclops, Wolverine finds Rogue on a train and convinces her to return to the school. Before they can leave, Magneto arrives, knocks out Wolverine, and subdues Rogue. Young people. revealing that it was Rogue who he wanted, not Wolverine. Although Xavier attempts to stop Magneto by mentally controlling Sabretooth and Toad, he is forced to release his hold on Sabretooth when Magneto threatens the police who have converged on the train station, allowing the Brotherhood of Evil to escape with Rogue. Kelly enters and arrives at Xavier's school, and Xavier reads his mind to learn about Magneto's machine, realizing the strain of powering it nearly killed Magneto. The group deduces he intends to transfer his powers to Rogue and use her to power it at the cost of her own life. Kelly's body rejects his mutated powers, and his body dissolves into a clear liquid. Xavier attempts to locate Rogue using Cerebro, but Mystique's sabotage incapacitates him too, and he falls into a coma. I guess he's, you know, back to normal at the end of the movie.
Yeah, we'll go into that.
Fellow telekinetic and telepath Jean Grey fixes Cerebro and uses it, learning that Magneto plans to place his mutation-inducing machine on Liberty Island and use it to locate the world leaders meeting at a summit on nearby Ellis Island. The X-Men scaled the Statue of Liberty, battling and overpowering the Brotherhood of Evil while Magneto transfers his powers to Rogue and activates the mutating machine. As Wolverine confronts and distracts Magneto, Cyclops blasts him away, allowing Wolverine to destroy the machine in the process. He transfers his powers to Rogue and his healing abilities rejuvenate her while, of course, knocking himself out. Professor Xavier and Wolverine recover from their comas. Two comas? Really? Never mind. The group also learns that Mystique escaped the island battle and is actually impersonating Senator Kelly, despite being severely injured by Wolverine, as shown by three scars left by him. Xavier gives Wolverine a lead to his past at an abandoned military installation in Canada near Alkali Lake. Magneto is imprisoned in a complex constructed out of plastic and is visited by Xavier to play their favorite game, chess, and Magneto warns him he intends to escape one day and continue to fight, for you see, there is a war coming, and I fully intend to be there when it happens. Now, that is a lot to process for an hour and 45-minute film, wouldn't you say?
I have to say, yeah, because some of the stuff is a bit complicated, but other than that, it's like, it's a simple story-ish.
Exactly, you know, simple-ish for the time of the early 2000s. This film had a lot of major rewrites done to it, but the bulk of the story was actually written by Mr. David Hayter. I believe. Yeah. If you guys don't know who he is, he's actually the major voice actor for Mr. Solid Snake in the Metal Gear Solid game series.
That's right. And a little fanboy moment. We got to meet the dude one day.
Exactly. We got to meet him at a convention in our hometown. A very nice and down-to-earth guy. When I learned that he had not only written this movie, but the sequel, X2, which we'll eventually get to talking about in a later Behind the Screens episode, I could not believe my ears. The man I was talking to.
I know. When I found it, I was like, wait, this guy wrote one of the best X-Men movies of all time? Oh my god!
I was just blown away. You know, the fact I got to shake his hand, take selfies, get autographs.
It was
all around a very good day. The way that, like, he portrays the characters is very down-to-earth, very not too extravagant, you know, like, he gets most of the characters down. He gets, you know, Wolverine, he gets Xavier, Magneto. A lot of the stuff could have been done a lot better, though, with the characters. Shall we get to talking about the characters before we roll back to the story and diverge that a little bit?
Oh, of course, yeah, because this movie introduces, like, a lot of iconic X-Men characters, and honestly, played by a good amount of actors.
Exactly right. Of course, we mentioned many times before while talking about the story, Logan Howlett, played by Hugh Jackman as the Wolverine, is one of the greatest superhero castings of all time. I'm not going to lie, without a single shadow of a doubt, not his appearance in X-Men and subsequently every film of his I saw afterwards solidified Hugh Jackman as one of the greatest actors of all time in my eyes. Probably, you know, at least of the 21st century, at least.
Oh, yeah, he's great, which is crazy considering he's Australian, yet he played a Canadian mutant.
Oh, sure, that's basically the same thing, you know, you just have to manipulate your voice and
Yeah, but hey, very convincing, though. So surprise, Wolverine is Canadian. I know, big shocker. But seriously though, he does play Wolverine very convincingly because Wolverine is seen as a loner, a tough guy, and he excels at that completely.
Exactly. Not only getting the hairstyle down, the clothing down, the adamantium claws for the year 2000 look surprisingly well 20 years later.
Yeah.
Protruding from between his knuckles, looking very threatening. The growl, which was not solidified yet by this point in the film series, since this was the inaugural story. It would, of course, get much better over time, and trust me, we'll be gushing about it more and more the more we talk about these films.
Oh, yeah.
But let me just say, his the insults he gives, the outbursts he has, the downright like zany moments that come out of nowhere.
Yeah.
Ultimately, it all worked to the film's benefit.
Absolutely.
Not gonna lie.
And again, yes, I can't believe he said bub.
Oh, God. Yeah, from, you mean in the scene with the Statue of Liberty in the final battle.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Make your move, bub. I'm like, yes! That's a Wolverine we love.
So very freaking awesome. Like, I'm pretty sure, like, there are just so many iconic moments from this. From the cage fight at the beginning, helping Rogue get to where she needs to go, even though he really doesn't want to. Waking up half naked in a school full of kids, even though he's like... Nope, I can't tell you that, folks. That's for a later
story.
Yeah,
can't spoil. Can't go too far. Can't eat all the cake.
I should like pretty much say though that Wolverine possibly maybe bias everything I'm talking about it because he is one of my favorite Marvel characters, possibly even one of my favorite superheroes of all time for his outlandishly brutish behavior, but his overall heart of gold, even in the most dire of situations. He's a guy you love to hate and would love to be friends with, or possibly even more so. Not gonna lie, like the best of buds, or you know, the best of bubs.
Saw that coming.
Okay.
But even though he is the main star of the movie and seals the show, the other actors do well too. But you could tell that
not all of them were of that level of quality.
Yeah. Let's first example: Storm, played by Halle Berry.
Now, okay.
To be fair, though. She is an alright Storm. It's just some of her dialogue is a bit...
questionable.
That and a bit stilted.
Very, very stilted. You know, I think that Halle Berry is a very fine actor. I think that she got robbed and overused in the early 2000s because of, you know, being a mixed woman of color in a very much changing Hollywood world. You know, like, the hoops that she had to jump through to get good acting roles really does sicken me when you read some of the stories. But you know what? I look at this film... I think she did fine. But basically, the fact of the matter is, there are some things I wish that they did amazingly better. Her makeup and costume just look terrible. Let me just say, the wig that she's wearing, because you could honestly tell it's a wig. If you can't, get glasses. Honestly.
I can vouch for that.
Because, I mean, though, mind you, she does have her very fine moments. Her very clearly fake African accent shows through all the time. And now that me and Chris have seen every single episode of the 90s X-Men animated series, just seeing Rogue in live action, especially her first appearance, was very underwhelming.
Yeah. Basically, Rogue got the short end of the stick. Not just in this movie, but every appearance she's been in when you think about it.
Well, not everyone. Although, mind you, I would say that any appearance that she makes in was not overly good, but they had their moments. I mean, how can you honestly forget one of the best moments of this movie? Do you know what happens to a toad when it gets struck by lightning?
Oh, Storm, yes. And also, we talked about how Wolverine's claws look good. The visual effects for Storm's lightning are still pretty good looking.
It's actually not bad. Not gonna lie, when we get to the end of the movie when she actually starts doing stuff, then I think, okay, now we're getting somewhere. She's actually convincing me that she's a superheroine and not just someone in a costume.
Yeah, she did good. I mean, costume choices aside, Storm is good, and that also applies to Rogue too, because Anna Paquin does a good job playing her.
Anna Paquin tries so damn hard, but this is probably one of those things where I try to deviate, try to make my own concrete opinions on this, on the three franchises of superhero films that we'll be doing first and foremost in our movie reviews on Behind the Screens. I really didn't like Rogue's story. I do think that at least half of it was there. They had a very decent actress to play her and a very nice person. Anna Paquin is such a doll.
Yes.
But I have to say, Rogue should not have been one of the main focuses of this movie. She should have been a really awesome supporting character like Storm and Jean and Cyclops. But the fact of the matter is, when we get to the other characters, I don't think she should have had as much focus as she did.
Yeah.
I'm really glad that we got a lot of decent things from her as a result, but it should have honestly gone down a different way, and I have my own theory about it, which we'll get to later.
Yeah.
But I mean, she had a very decent arc. She was a very nice driving point. But of course, now that I've seen the 90s X-Men show and how voluptuous she was in that, I don't think that there could be... Well, I mean, obviously from any other cartoons, I haven't seen any of the other X-Men cartoons. Once I see that, then I'll form a more solid opinion. But as of this recording, on this day in the name of our Lord, 2021, I have to say that animated Rogue was better in the outward department, but Anna Paquin did a very decent job.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, 90s cartoon Rogue, they say she's a Southern Belle. They really solidified that. But
trust me, we'll get to that at a later date.
But
in this movie, she does a very good job of, you know, playing the very quiet and very, you know, confined person. How, like, she clearly doesn't want to hurt anybody, but Rogue used her, like, weakness as, like, a strength. She was very outward. She was very, you know, like, out there in the world. She was always willing to punch evil and use her power for the good of all. But the fact of the matter is, she wasn't always moping about it.
She
was moping sometimes, of course, but that, like, wasn't the whole thing. Not like in this movie where she wears her hood 24/7. It's like, this is very early 2000s cliche where the girl has to be quiet and sit in the corner and wait for stuff to happen.
Yeah, emo is not cool anymore, people.
No. Maybe it was good for a day in the year 2000, but not in these days.
But okay, so the other characters, they're good too. Like James Marsden as Cyclops, he's all right.
I know one friend of mine will say that there's nothing bad about James Marsden, and neither do I.
No, he's great.
He's very talented. He's very good looking. He has a wide range of, you know, amazing abilities, not just acting but singing and dancing.
Yeah,
but I have to say, well, maybe it was the perfect casting of, he's bland. He's got at least 51% of Cyclops down.
And again, we're also comparing, because we just recently watched the 90s X-Men cartoon. Yeah, 90s Cyclops was just way better. But James Marsden did not do an awful job.
No.
But I feel like some of the dialogue could have been a little better.
Exactly. The fact of the matter is, like, Cyclops is not the greatest X-Men. He's just the one they, aside from Wolverine, that they tend to use a lot because he's got eye beams. He has an amazing superpower, but he is the most bland superhero I've probably ever seen. One of them, anyway. He stands there. He just, like back and forths with Wolverine sometimes about, you know, him looking at, you know, Jean Grey's ass all the time. Like I'm just saying, it's like, dude, do something that makes me, like, be engaged with you. Don't just stand there and shake your head. Nobody wants to sit here and listen to you talk like this for an hour and 45 minutes. But, like, I must admit, he did a very decent job for what he did. Of course, one of my favorite lines from like him in this movie is when they're suiting up for the final battle, Wolverine mocks the costumes because they look nothing like the comics, and of course, Cyclops says, "Well, what were you expecting? Yellow spandex?" It's like, I immediately shouted this thing when, like, you and I recently watched this movie to prepare for this. Yes! Yes! I mean, seriously, I want to see colorful and wacky superhero costumes. That's one of the the conventions of it. If Batman suddenly showed up wearing giant body armor, like in these weird leather things, I'm thinking, this is not Batman, this is Batman. And so it's gonna be like,
although it's kind of ironic, because in later X-Men movies, we do see yellow spandex.
Yes, and we will get all about that later. And whatever negative conventions I had about the costumes in this movie, I still don't think they're great, but they like serve their purpose very well. They are stylish to a degree.
Yeah, it was the early 2000s where leather was still popular, I guess.
Barely, yeah. It was there, but it was easily fading out. What character should we talk about next?
Honestly, Jean Grey.
Jean Grey
is, ooh, how do you describe her in this franchise?
I mean, the franchise overall, definitely not great. But, you know, in this movie, they gave the illusion that they knew what they were doing with her.
Right.
They tricked us into thinking they had an idea of who Jean Grey was. You know, she's the comfort person. She's the amazing, strong, supportive friend that everybody wishes we could have. The one who's always looking out for your best interests, even if you are not. And I think that's an amazing thing for a character to be.
Sounds about fair.
Not gonna lie, you know, in this movie, she stands up to Congress and Senator Kelly, looks him in the eyes and says, "Yo, this is not a good idea. You can't just force people who are terrified of being persecuted and prosecuted out in the open because you're terrified." It's basically like, I really don't mean to get into rational politics here, but then again, the X-Men are all about politics.
Yeah, pretty much.
Basically, the fact of the matter is, like, I'm not entirely sure if this is correct because, you know, I'm a 21-year-old guy trying to be a teacher, so what do I know? Basically, the same thing about mutants in this Registration Act could possibly be the same thing about gun control.
Yeah.
Guns, by themselves, are a threat to no one. You leave a gun here for 1,000 years, leave it alone, it'll do absolutely nothing. You leave the mutants alone, there's a very good chance that that they will do absolutely nothing, which is what the good idea is. But, of course, Senator Kelly in this movie showcases the idea just because they can hurt us, they will hurt us eventually. And I'm just thinking to myself, you saying all these big words coming out of your mouth, like I'm listening to you as a very confident American citizen, but all I hear is you're afraid. That is all I hear. People get defensive most of all when they are afraid for their lives. Basically,
offensive of today.
Congress is afraid of what these people with extraordinary abilities can do, so they're stopping them without even considering if they are dangerous or not. You are giving them reasons to hate you. You are giving them reasons to become what you fear they are. And it really spoke to me. And even though it was in passing, it was very, by the numbers, getting the story where it needed to go, it spoke bounds decades later.
You got that right.
What were we talking about? Oh, yeah, Jean Grey.
Yeah,
what else can we say?
I mean, she's a regular telepath and is
she's nice.
She's an okay scientist, I guess.
Yeah, I know. She kind of has a thing for Wolverine, I think.
Oh, boy.
Because
that whole debacle.
Because I do want to point this out there. When we watched the 90s X-Men show, when it was introducing hints of the Cyclops, Jean, and Wolverine love triangle, I was interested to see where it was going. I've always seen it as dumb fodder that people always expect in these kinds of movies. But one thing that I will always love about Jean is her compassionate spirit and her love for Mr. Scott Summers. She is the one person in the universe who he is her favorite. And that will always be happy.
And the love she has for Scott, it feels really genuine, like a real relationship.
Absolutely it does.
Then you factor in Mr. Adamantium Claws over here and it gets a little...
And it'll be like, ooh, bad boy.
Yeah.
That's so funny. I love stories where like a chick who's so bare basic with a bare basic boyfriend goes after the dude in the hot leather and the motorcycle. That is so funny. I absolutely adore it.
Yeah, but Jean's okay, but let's be honest, though. Besides Wolverine, the two standouts are Professor X and Magneto. Ian McKellen and Patrick Stewart do an amazing job playing the ball.
You mean Robert Patrick.
I'm just
doing stuff with y'all. Don't worry about that.
Patrick Stewart and Ian McKellen, wow. Their versions of Professor X and Magneto, they're good, but some of the dialogue they say to each other has aged a bit.
We are more important than they are, Charles. They no longer matter. And it'd be like, oh, my dude. It's like, what can you honestly do? Basically, the fact of the matter is, I relate to the character of Magneto so darn much, looking back on my many years in my family ancestral history. My grandparents ran away from the Nazis in the mid-40s. Not being as wildly persecuted as everyone, they were simply cogs in the machine. But they stood up to tyranny. They escaped and wanted a new life for their children. Magneto does the exact same thing. He wants to create a world where you don't have to be worried about being branded something that can easily be disposed of because of one thing that everybody hates. To be used as like this awful symbol. And it really is compelling. A dude in a metal suit with purple and red on it, with a flowing cape and a sinister laugh, just wants to make the world a better place. In the worst possible way.
Yeah. Now, even though we have the younger incarnation of Magneto played by Michael Fassbender in the later movies, Ian McKellen, his version of Magneto, you really can see the sinisterness of him in his acting. Like, some of the stuff that Magneto says in this movie and the movies and the subsequent sequels, Magneto really feels like a threatening villain. He's one of the Marvel Universe's most deadliest villains for a reason, because some of the stuff he says is... It makes you really feel scared of this guy.
Absolutely. My favorite scene with the guy was clearly when they were exiting the train station with Rogue, seeing all the police turn their guns. Then he turns their guns right back at them. I can, like, going through my head, those very same political thoughts, all I could think of is, how does it feel? It sucks, doesn't it?
Yeah, and the line he says is 32 is like, you homo sapiens and your guns. I'm thinking to myself, oh god, you do not want to screw with this guy.
Especially when Charles takes over the mind of his henchmen, Sabretooth and Toad, basically trying to force him a surrender. Yo, Xavier says, Magneto thinks that I can play that card too, threatens to kill all of the police trying to stop it, saying, you can stop it, Charles, you know you can, you just won't make the hard decisions, you and I can change the world, make it better, but you choose the path of folly. And I absolutely adore their battles, and it's freaking good.
There's a reason why they play chess at the end of the movie. Their battles are like a giant game of chess.
Amazingly so. With all the pawns and characters on the board fighting for different sides, it really is amazingly so. Even though Professor X may not be one of my favorite Marvel characters ever for a multitude of reasons that I will no doubt get into in later videos of this incredible podcast, I do admire Charles Xavier's unbridled humanity. How he believes in something that doesn't deserve to survive. Humanity is wicked and bitter and a plague upon this earth that evolution has spewed out onto Mother Nature's shores.
Yeah.
But he somehow manages to always look for the good in people, which is something that I think almost nobody on this planet could ever really do.
I always
look at him and say, I don't always agree with your methods, but the world you fight for is the one I want to live in. And that is just beautiful. It really, really is.
It's really fitting. Yeah.
Oh my god.
Now, speaking of Magneto's henchmen, the only standout was Mystique.
Yes, yes, it usually is, especially since she's practically naked.
Yeah, I mean, they got away with it because they didn't show nipples.
Exactly, so. As long as you don't show those, everything else goes.
Oh, yeah.
The fact of the matter is, like, when we saw her 90s look with those skull skirts and skull tops.
That was awesome.
I'm just thinking to myself, you know, that looks really cool and a little better on the eyes, but you know what, for like a decade jump in time period, she was fine, you know, curled back red hair with glowing eyes, voice, even though she didn't really do much except to act as a really decent fighter most of the movie.
To be fair though, I mean, her shape-shifting abilities is what defines her. Like she is a real mistress of disguise.
Exactly. You know, the fact of the matter is that she could blend in. Like, it's actually one of the greater points that, once again, the show touched on and the movies would later do, but not immediately here. The fact of the matter is that she could easily blend into the human world, but she knows that no matter what mask she puts on, it will never wash away the fact that she's different. The fact that people will always fear the person she really is. She was born to lead an unhappy life. Yeah. And it's so tragic when you think about it, honestly.
Now, there's also Sabretooth.
Played by Tyler frickin' Mane. Like, let me tell you, I've seen a few of this dude's movies playing Michael Myers in Rob Zombie's duology from 2007 and 2009.
He was Michael Myers in those Halloween movies?
Yeah, he was in those. Oh. He was basically in the remake two-parter.
Oh,
which,
great.
Let me tell you, he was honestly the best part in those. You know, he played the terrifying killer so darn well. I've honestly never seen as many people who could play terrifying stone coldly like Mr. Mane. The makeup on him looked mixed for me, because he has all the woolly hair and everything.
Yeah.
He's got the sharp teeth and the dead eyes. But he really should have talked more,
but
honestly.
He didn't. He's just basically Magneto's muscle with fur. And I'm thinking to myself, so why does he hate Wolverine again?
Because, you know what? That stuff is never explained until 9 years. It took 9 years of waiting for us to finally learn, and we will tell you all about that once we get there. Just assume that they hate each other. Every time that Sabretooth grunts, he means, I hate you. That's basically what it is. I mean,
not a bad translation.
I've also, like, chalked it up to the fact that Tyler Mane never talks in any of his movies. But the fact of the matter is, he never talked as Michael Myers. He was in Playing with Fire 2 years ago.
Really?
Yeah, you know, he was the guy with the beard and the axe. He was that guy. We will get to that movie. I have a whole speech about that movie. And we will, one day, if it's ever recommended to us, once we get past all the superhero hullabaloo, you might want to get some popcorn for that.
Oh, God.
But, of course, wrapping it up, Sabretooth was an excellent muscle character, an excellent match for Wolverine. He really needed more dialogue, though.
Yeah, absolutely.
Some more outworked characters, and he really should have been Tyler Mayne, at least. Should have definitely been in the rest of the original X-Men trilogy.
Yeah.
But, of course, his character continued in the expanded universe novelizations that branched the Singer movies, the Brett Ratner movie. He survives the fall off the Statue of Liberty once being blasted by Cyclops' I-beams. But, of course, what happens to him after that is really, really hazy. Just know that he's always there, but we never see him.
Yeah.
Which really stinks. Yeah.
But then there's Toad. Toad played by none other than Ray Park.
Darth Maul himself.
And he still does his own stunts, and it is awesome to look at.
Let me tell you, anytime a movie has Ray Park in it, no matter how bad the movie may be, he is always one of the best parts.
Yeah, is that the G.I. Joe movies? Yeah. The first two, anyway.
The first two.
Him as Darth Maul and Phantom Menace. Indeed. Heck yes.
Oh, my God. Like, let me tell you, even though I threw a lot of shade at how bad his makeup looked with the very ominous thing about him looking like a like a toad with the greenish face and the dyed green hair. Yeah. The long tongue was really not as effective as it probably was 20 years ago.
Yeah.
But you know what? His fighting style more than made up for all of it.
Yeah, he's doing flips, he's doing parkour. I'm thinking to myself, is Toad this agile in the comics? Good Lord.
I mean, trust me, we saw what Toad looked like in the 90s animated series, and as soon as I saw that, I took back everything bad I said about this version. Because compared to that fat, tubby guy that we saw in season 4, who is clearly supposed to be Toad, I'm thinking to myself, this guy is definitely better.
Oh, yeah.
Because no matter how I may feel about the makeup and everything, it was still better than whatever that was.
Oh,
and of course, who could forget the little dance he does in
that dance was fun.
You could tell that was not in the movie. He was just having a ball. He was having a ball, just having a lot of fun, just fighting Gene and everybody inside the Ellis Island and Statue of Liberty type things. They had some really cool sets in this in this movie too. The school will actually always be one of my favorite superhero film locations, right next to Avengers Tower in the Batcave and whatnot.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. The school's great, but also the last third of the movie itself was honestly one of the best parts, because the whole fight, and minus Wolverine's flip on the Statue of Liberty's crown, that's a dated effect now. Like, what is that?
Very much dated indeed.
What are they trying to do? Like 360 it? I don't know.
Lord knows, my friend. But of course, we have to talk about all the other minor characters in the film, of course. But before we do, let's talk a little about Senator Kelly. Not too much, though. He plays his role very well. He's supposed to be the bigoted politician who's always saying, you gosh darn immigrants always ruining this country. Basically, I do feel bad for him, though.
The fact of the matter is,
as we saw in the darn 90s cartoon, he becomes president after seeing that his bigoted attitude was wrong and actually becomes a full-fledged mutant supporter, which I thought was really awesome.
Absolutely!
Showing that no matter how bigoted you may be, anybody can change. In this movie, he just turns into sludge. Which is
very reflective of his own personality.
That's true. Honestly, though, I do wish that they would have played him up more. The fact of the matter is, he's kidnapped, he's turned into sludge, he dies. The actor is still employed, though, because Mystique impersonates him at the end of this movie and for a good chunk of the sequel. But of course, there's really nothing more to talk about him. He plays his role as the racist politician well, and I do solemnly wish that he was in more of the story.
Oh, yeah.
But of course, now let's do a lightning round with the rest of the characters. We have other characters such as Bobby Iceman, of course.
Oh, yeah. Iceman's an iconic X-Men character.
Exactly, though. The fact of the matter is, even in of course, modern comics, he's shown as to be less heterosexual, as in, this story, he's very much into Rogue at the start of their first meeting of each other. He makes her... Does he, make her a little, sculpture out of ice?
Yes, he does. I think it was, a rose.
Oh, that... Yes, I thought that was so sweet. You go, Bobby. I certainly hope those crazy kids will have no problems in later movies. But of course, we can only hope to see. A lot of these other actors and characters were either given bigger roles, recast, or simply dropped from the future movies altogether.
Yeah.
Including Kitty Pryde, Jubilee, Colossus, and Pyro.
Pyro was interesting.
Of course, my friend. Oh my god, and you'll never believe this, Kevin Feige was in this movie.
Huh?
The producer of one of the biggest financial producers of the Marvel Cinematic Universe was there in the background as one of the Weapon X tech people in Wolverine's flashbacks.
Really?
In the movie, but his scenes did not make the final cut.
Dang it!
He was there, they cut all of his scenes out, and then he swore to get revenge by getting the best superhero franchise ever made, where his name would be all over it, where it would be impossible to forget he made it.
And honestly, but outside of that, he's a wholesome man. He's a really wholesome man.
He seems like such a nice guy. I really do need to listen to more of his interviews, obviously.
Yeah.
Since we'll be talking a lot more about these characters in future movies, let's do a lightning round of Kitty, Jubilee, Colossus, and Pyro.
Okay, honestly, I like them in other movies.
Yeah, me too. Kitty Pryde only has one or two scenes in this to show that she's a girl that can walk through walls.
Yeah.
She will be recasted by an actor named Elliot Page, who we'll have to be very careful talking about once we get to that episode, but rest assured, we will be as respectful as we can to his feelings.
Absolutely.
Jubilee, once again, does absolutely almost nothing.
Yeah, I feel like they replace her every movie that she's in.
It's so true. You know, people may find her annoying, and you know what? I think of her as the perfect 80s and 90s kid.
That's what she is. That's why she was the new token newbie in the 90s cartoon.
Absolutely. You know, the fact of the matter is, okay, here comes that tidbit I was making about Rogue when we were going after the characters. Jubilee should have been the character that ran away to Canada to find Wolverine.
Yeah, I have to admit, like, if I wanted to put Rogue in this movie, have her already as an X-Men and as a student at the school.
Have her be flying around the mansion, having already taken Captain Marvel's powers when she was a villain. But then, of course, have Jubilee maybe set her house on fire, run away in the distance to go to Canada, cut away to many months later. You see her go through Rogue's exact scenes. It would be so much more awesome if they did that. I don't want to be overly mean and overly critical because, you know, I tend to do that more often than I'd care to believe.
Oh, yeah.
I'd like to believe they didn't make Jubilee the main central focus character opposite Hugh Jackman because they didn't want a Chinese female to be the leading character in an American superhero movie.
Yeah.
Thankfully, that stuff would never pass today. But of course, it's always going to be something I point out whenever I watch the movie now.
Yeah. Thankfully, stuff has changed with Shang-Chi, but moving on.
Colossus.
Okay, Colossus, he's okay, but I just can't get over his appearances in the Deadpool movies. That's his best incarnation because it's the right proportions, he's Russian, he's tough, he's silver, all that jazz.
No Colossus Russian accent, me no likey the character.
I mean, to be fair though, the Colossus they had in the original, in this movie, and he showed up in the other movies, he's fine.
Yeah.
To be fair though, he doesn't talk much, so that's at least not so bad, but could have been better.
One of the biggest problems that I will have, at least with the original trilogy, only half of the cast has any meaningful dialogue.
Yeah.
The rest of the heroes are just there to say, oh, my favorite hero was in that movie. What did they do?
I don't know.
Because exactly that, they should have given, I mean, thankfully, they finally gave the hero stuff to do, but by that point, it was already too late. You should have done that right from the get-go. At least they had Pyro being a dick.
Pyro's kind of a jerk.
Because, like, the fact of the matter is, Pyro is actually one of our least favorite villains from the X-Men animated series.
Yeah, but so, here, though,
he's actually not that bad.
And even though he's a minor character, he also goes through a little bit of a character arc. He starts out good, but then by the second...
Don't spoil.
Oh, right, yeah.
He
may be on the good side, but he can show to be still an arrogant jerk once in a while.
Because he's the bully guy. Every early 2000s high school film had a bully somewhere.
Plus, he's on top and always on fire.
Exactly, my friend. Okay, so now that we've gone through all the characters, let me do a quick run-through of the film's achievements behind the scenes before we go back and talk about the story. Then we'll do the accolades, final wrap-ups, and so on and so forth.
Achievements?
The film was made on a $75 million budget, thankfully making $296 million at the box office. Amazingly enough, it was enough for... The film has made a major financial success, grossing that amount of money, receiving positive reviews from critics, citing the performances of the actors, the story, and the thematic depth of the overall tone of the narrative.
Oh, yeah.
The film's success led to a series of sequels, prequels, reboots, spin-offs, with an overall success of the series spawning a resurgence of superhero films in the public's eye. And we can definitely attest to that, my friend.
Absolutely!
Everything started from there and just kept going up and up and up and up and up. Now, let's do like little tidbits of the story, first of all. They really did an excellent job talking, like showing the opening scene from Poland. Because being like some guy who like grew up on my father loving World War II, you know, seeing how evil the Nazis were and how amazing America was, it would be totally natural that someone who was treated less than dirt would flock to America to look for a better life, thinking the land of opportunity where anybody can be a success, only to be, you know, once again cast out, but not with iron bars, with words. And sometimes words hurt worse than anything else.
Yeah, words are the most lethal weapon, people.
Exactly, my friends. The scene in Congress with Gene going up against the congressman is actually very interesting when you think about it. All of the congressmen are wearing gray suits, while Gene is wearing bright and red flamboyant suits.
That stand out. Also ironic because her last name is Gray.
Which is so weird too. But of course, that's something that we'll get into another day. Mm. Basically showing that she is a lot more bright and hopeful for the future, while Congress and the United States government has basically given up on the downtrodden.
Yeah, kind of flatlined.
Them basically keeping Magneto's face hidden for the first part of the movie is honestly a good way to build up suspense.
Absolutely.
Showing of him as a guy with ulterior motives to best Charles Xavier and all of his outgoings.
Yeah.
But of course, we have our first introductions to Rogue and Logan. The setting for Mississippi was fine. I think that the scene should have been longer with like us actually showing how Rogue got to Canada, because like it basically seems like we cut a scene where we should have seen her parents arguing over, what do we do with her? She's a monster. She's no daughter of mine. I want her out of this house. Because they did that in the 90s show. They showed us unapologetically her dad yelling in her face, telling that you know, he didn't have a daughter anymore. He had no kids. She didn't exist. She was nothing. And like we really should have seen that. They robbed us of that. It's a PG-13 movie. If teenagers can do it, honestly.
Yeah.
But like, of course, we have the amazing osity of the Canadian bar scene with Beast's actual voice actor from the 90s show being the one that drove Rogue up there. Which is honestly super freaking awesome.
I did not know that. That's actually pretty cool.
The fight with Wolverine in the ring over there was honestly very intense.
It was a cage match. Of course it was intense.
Any chance I can get to see Hugh Jackman shirtless, I'll pay triple for that. Like then there is,
and the Hugh Jackman love train is back, folks.
Yes, it is. Basically, the scenes of tension where even when you leave the United States, it shows that other countries are even like as discriminatory against mutants. You know, back when people are threatening Logan when he brings out the claws. They all act all tough when they think they can beat him. The second they find out that he's virtually unstoppable to normal humans, they all cower away in fear. Which is exactly why he likes to be alone. He knows that his appearance terrifies people.
Oh,
so,
yeah.
So, you know, he'd rather just keep to himself. But, of course, Rogue stows away in his truck and the shenanigans begins.
Oh, yeah!
The fighting with Sabretooth in the woods is honestly not a half bad idea.
No, it's not.
When you see something with dead beady eyes and big claws looking at you from the Canadian snow, you're thinking to yourself, oh God, get a weapon and get it right now.
Yeah, a knife, a gun, maybe a silver bullet, I don't know.
But then of course we see Logan wake up in the I'm in the basement in the deep bowels of the X-Mansion. He goes up in this very futuristic setting with chrome walls and then little brightly made blue X's
everything is chrome in the future.
Yes, very, very true. As evident by this lamp that is also chrome, and this coaster that is also chrome.
Hey, don't touch that merchandise.
Okay. Basically, we go up to the school. We see all the happy faces of all the kids. Wolverine is realizing, this is my worst nightmare. What? Children!
Yeah.
But then, of course, we see Xavier giving the rundown of Logan, giving him the bare bones of exposition about the X-Men.
Yeah.
What's going on? I really do wish that we could have seen more of the X-Men using their powers. Like, we see Scott shooting frisbees with his eye lasers and stuff like that.
Yeah.
We should have seen more stuff from Storm.
Maybe like a training montage.
Yeah, like an actual honest-to-God training montage with, like, Wolverine walking past all the windows. Look out, see hero. Look out, see hero.
Yeah.
Stuff like that.
That makes it better.
Basically, then we cut to the very ominous Genosha hideout, which is honestly so dimly lit that you just feel ominous in this. And of course, we have to talk about Magneto's desk in the corner.
Yeah,
because
that's
it's so silly. The fact that this guy just thinks of himself as like this like world-saving person, but he has a sinister desk in the corner.
Well, I'm sure other villains have that way too.
I know. I mean, of course, it just really sells the look of the place. Not gonna lie. But then, of course, one of my all-time favorite scenes in the entire movie. The scene when Wolverine has the nightmare and accidentally stabs Rogue when she's looking at him. Basically, I had been years since I had seen the movie to prep for this podcast episode. When I saw that, the look on Hugh Jackman's face stripped away the broodingness of it to see fear in his eyes. The fact that he thought that he killed this girl. And like the screaming he does for help is like, oh God. That's amazing. I would have given him a gosh darn award just for that one scene alone.
Yeah, just let me just get this random Oscar
and chuck it to him. The person we took it from clearly doesn't need it.
Yeah.
But then of course we have the scenes of Mystique sneaking onto the campus. Very good.
Oh yeah.
We have the scenes with Cerebro, which was very good the first time.
Yeah.
And it got less and less cool because they kept doing it over and over and over again.
Yeah.
And the fact of the matter is, I really wouldn't bother if it the future movies they showed off the amazing technology of a superhero story. But they kept doing it again and again with nothing new or interesting happening. Once again, in the cartoon, Cerebro was either shown very briefly or we got to see a different visual.
You can tell that after we saw the 90s cartoon, we have a lot of bias towards that show now.
Oh, well, I mean, I wouldn't say biased. I'm just saying that we saw so many things done better there that could have been done here if they just tried a little harder.
That's fair. Yeah.
I mean, though, I would honestly say that when they go to the train station, it is, really funny to see Halle Berry walk up to the guy in her ridiculous wig.
Yeah.
And basically, I would have loved a joke where someone was trying to call security on her. But unfortunately, we don't get that. But then, of course, the fight inside the train station is okay, brief.
The fight outside, though, is way better.
Exactly. Then, of course, we get the scene with Magneto and Wolverine trying, as Magneto tries to take Rogue away. He fights to the very bitter end, only to be helpless against someone who can crush metal in his bare hands.
Oh yeah.
It was honestly very terrifying. We talked about the scene outside enough. Now let's skip over to when they tried to see where he is. Obviously, Xavier goes into a coma for the rest of the movie. It's kind of a thing that I always like to joke about with these movies. Patrick Stewart gets to literally sleep through half of his performance as Charles Xavier.
Oh,
basically,
yeah.
Because he's either lying over there or he's lying over there. Or
he's face down here.
Yeah.
He's got a kid draining him here.
he's basically the person who is one of the most talented actors in the cast, yet he's the one who tries the least. When it, calls it for, of course. When he needs to try, he tries very hard.
Oh, but, yeah, of course.
But then, of course, we get the amazing scene where we learn the Jet, the Blackbird, right?
Yeah.
Is under the gosh darn basketball court.
I'd like to see the lawsuits on that one. So you got hurt because the basketball court opened up and a plane flew up?
That's
yes!
Exactly what happened. And you're telling me this is a normal school for normal kids.
Gifted kids, but yes.
Oh, gift? Yeah, okay. Sure. Well, no, you're going to be sued as the same as a gifted kid. Okay, very fine. But still, a really cool effect that I'm really glad that we can continuously talk about when we get to these movies.
Oh, yeah.
But then, of course, we get to the very decent-ish good climax of all the X-Men fighting the bad guys on Ellis Island and, you know, the Statue of Liberty and all that.
Yeah.
You know, like, we get to see Mystique playing mind games, Toad being very hilarious and funny, Sabretooth being ruthless. I really do wish that, like, we could have gotten a longer fight scene with Magneto, though, towards the end.
Oh, yeah. That fight was pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, like, I just wish they extended some points out. I really do like a lot of aspects of this gosh darn movie, though, despite my constant nitpicks of, oh, look at that, look at that, look at that. You know, I could watch this for years, no matter how many people hype this film up, because it's a very important, not only piece of superhero cinema, but cinema in general. Basically, the fact is, talking about politics should never be swept under the rug.
No, because it's never
too late to educate yourselves on what is right. And you know what? Stan Lee's idea to make a superhero team based around those who were different from birth, honestly, was one of the best ideas he ever had.
Even
if, you know, people like Chris Claremont did more things later on down the line with it, you always have to thank those who started the trend, of course.
Absolutely.
And then, of course, we have the ending of the film, which sets up a lot of stuff for the future installments, which, of course, we'll be seeing in future installments of Behind the Screens. Wolverine leaves the mansion to go back to Canada to find the origins of his nightmares, his memory loss. Just what the hell is he? And, of course, a very sweet moment with Rogue when you know, he gives her his dog tags, saying that, you know, he'll be back for them, so hold on to them for me, will you, kid?
Yeah.
And then, of course, you know, we get the nice big wrap-up moment with everybody smiling and happy and saying, we won the day, except kind of not really, because people are still racist.
Yeah.
But then, of course, one of my favorite scenes in the movie, one scene that I could honest to God see you and me reenacting when we're like 55 or 60, like you as Charles Xavier and me as Magneto, basically just two old friends playing chess in a dimly lit room saying that for now it's 1-0, but Magneto is just laughing all this off, thinking that yes, Charles may have won today, but that does not mean he will win tomorrow. The future is still his for the taking, so long as there is still mutant hate everywhere.
Yeah, that is a good way to sum up the ending of this movie. So, now, final thoughts. Mike, how would you rate this movie?
Honestly, I've, you know, mentioned it numerous times. Many other folks think of this film as being overhyped, overliked, something that was just a thing for the times that got popular, so they made more things about it. Honestly, I see it as not only a testimonial to the start of a new century, the start of a new change for not only the world, but for superheroes as well. A chance to start over, to start anew, while looking at something that's been around for years. The prejudice of those who by normal people's standards, would be considered in the way, a burden, something that can so easily be tossed aside like yesterday's trash. A fight between good and evil in, while yes, cartoonishly natured, put into a live-action, teen, angsty setting. A lot of stuff really did work in this film. You know, the characters were likable to an extent when it came to most of them. The sets and the fighting were truly top-notch. The effects, while mostly dated, are still very awesome to look at with Wolverine's claws, Cyclops's eye beams, etc., etc. The story is fairly basic, but you know, when you start out a massive franchise, you gotta start small.
Yeah.
That's how we got Star Wars, after all.
Oh, yeah.
And no, I'd honestly say that it really does work as every bit as any first chapter should be. A story about one of the weirdest families with a very strange tree. And honestly, I can't wait to talk about these characters more and more in the future.
Yeah.
So, it is with my great pleasure to gratefully gift 2000's X-Men, directed by Bryan Singer, from 20th Century Fox, a B+ letter grade.
A B+! Not bad!
Indeed. How about you, Chris?
Honestly, it's a good start to an iconic franchise. Because this movie has its moments. Like, it has its iconic moments, sets up interesting characters, actors are all great. Some of the stuff is really aged, though, really, because this was 21 years ago. This was when superhero movies really started to really become part of the mainstream, and you could tell. Some stuff was dated, other things, like, and it's just overshadowed by a lot of other X-Men, a lot of other movies in this franchise that turned out to be better, but this is still a solid movie, and Yeah, that's the best word I can describe this movie. It is solid. It's not the best, but it's not the worst. I feel like if it rides that fine line where it's the middle ground and it's still an alright movie, and I wouldn't mind going back to it a couple times. So, all in all, I have to give the first X-Men movie a solid 8 out of 10.
Very good. Very, very egregious, I think. After rambling on for an hour about comic book politics, real world events, and people who can suck away their people's life forces simply by touching them, how will we follow up in the next episode of Behind the Screens next week, Chris?
Well, I'm thinking, honestly, I'm not really sure how.
And you know what? I was feeling about this. You know, you guys were probably expecting more episodes of Batman the Animated Series next week, and we were too. But then we had an epiphany. Why don't we shake up things a little bit?
Yeah, so instead of gray and black, let's go a little blue and red, shall we?
Indeed. We'll be talking about the third superhero franchise that we've been talking about that would, like, we will be shuffling along in between our television talks. We started out with Iron Man from the MCU. Tonight we did X-Men from the Fox X-Men storyline. And thirdly, which will be happening next week, is the first film of the DC Extended Universe from Warner Brothers, Man of Steel, 2013, directed by Zack Snyder.
Oh, this is going to be an interesting one. But that's all for tonight, folks. Until then, I'm Chris.
I'm Mike.
This has been Behind the Screens. We'll see you guys next time.
Adios, filmgoers.